back with episode 766 of The Critical Myth. I'm Johnny Host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights, and I feel like I just saw a bit of the Kingsman sequel.
Well, this is Gary from Jacksonville, and you know, how can you ever go wrong with a good set of concrete galoshes?
I don't even think I can follow that up with anything, but maybe, you know, Supernatural actually went a long way to explaining recent political changes. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But we are going to be concluding our episodic discussion for this particular week. There's still quite a few episodes to go through. And then if we have a little bit of time later, we might get into a little bit of open discussion before we take our end of year break. But before we do any of that, Edmund, if you could give a disclaimer. That's one of the year. Come on.
Yes. As always, we will discuss whatever we feel like, which might even include crucial plot details and incidents in these episodes that we will be talking about. So, yes, you must have watched the episodes or you will be hideously, horribly, nastily spoiled.
That's right. That's right. All right. So we are going to jump right into it with our next episode on the list. This one coming in at an average of 8. So right at the above average mark, Vikings Season 4, Episode 12, The Vision. Ragnar's difficulties raising a crew for the voyage to Wessex leaves Kattegat locals admonishing him that the gods have deserted him. Meanwhile, Bjorn's dream to explore the Mediterranean is within reach. Yeah, this one came in at an average of 8. Much of this, what's a little bit odd for this episode. I think that the episode overall continues this great exploration and introduction of Ragnar's sons to kind of give the whole impetus of future seasons, perhaps, with them at the forefront. But there is this one little hook that Michael Hurst, who writes every episode of the show, so it's one of those kinds of things. He has this whole subplot of visions that one character is going to die. There's just one problem. It's a historical figure. We know he lives well beyond this point in history. So, and they're not going to change things that big in this kind of show. They very, very rarely change the historical details to that degree. So it's like, wow, you're setting up this whole idea and foreshadowing that this character is going to drown. And everyone knows he doesn't. And then even worse, the minute the episode ends, they start showing the promo and the character is right there. It's like, you spent all this narrative time, wasted it, setting up this whole artful vision that this person's going to drown, and then it's very clear that it was all for nothing. So what, like, really? Other than that, the episode is fine. It's great. It's another great episode of Vikings, but it's just a curious choice. Really odd.
Now you understand why I've sworn off promos.
Well, I usually do, but it's one of those situations literally.
Yeah, well, yeah,
the minute the episode ended, they, you know, the credits start and they pop the promo at the top of the credits.
Yeah, I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah, and literally the first shot is of the guy who was supposedly dying. Mm. It's like, oh, well, yeah, and of course it's, you know, that particular character. I he's prominent right now for a reason, because historically he's very prominent. So. Just did not add up well for what the writer was intending.
Although I must say, even though it's a show I've never picked up, I'm very, very pleased to hear that a original series from the History Channel does, in fact, try to stay historically accurate.
Oh, yeah. They do a pretty good job. The guy who writes this show, Michael Hurst, I mentioned his name before, he's kind of... That's his wheelhouse. He's mm-hmm. done for other networks. Like, for instance, he did The Tudors.
Right.
Which was pretty accurate.
Okay.
I mean, it kind of dramatized things a little bit, but it did a pretty good job of hewing closely to the actual events. And he did a couple other shows. I think he might have been involved with the Borgias to a certain extent. So it's just, this is what he does. He does shows that mix... You know, that are a good mix of actual history and so forth. And the nice thing about this show is that while the sons of Ragnar Lothbrok are historically, you know, in the historical record, Ragnar himself is not. So it's this very strange mixture of mythology and history, because clearly these kids came from somewhere, but they're kind of legendary because their father is not historically, you know, primary source. I guess you could say. It's more secondary sort of stuff. So it's got this nice layer of mythology to it, too. So he does have room to play with the legend and the myth, and that's been one of the draws of the show, at least in my opinion. But certainly I feel like this was just odd because it was like, really, your fan base is pretty savvy about the historical parts. They're going to call you on this.
Yeah.
So next we have on the list, also coming in at an average of 8, we have Supernatural Season 12, Episode 8, Lotus. Yes? POTUS? Lotus.
Lotus, yes.
Lucifer's search for power and influence in a vessel lands him in the White House where he, the president, unknowingly makes a deal with the devil. I believe there's an extra word in there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This one came in at an average of 8. Really, if they had only known how the election would end, they could have taken this so much further.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what side you fall on here, this was clearly meant to be at least partially satirical. But really what makes this work is the reintroduction, the return of the British Men of Letters. And that really works well.
Yeah.
That and also deciding to have Sam be the one to do the exorcism to get Lucifer out of the president.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, that's a nice bit of continuity right there.
Yeah. So yeah, certainly this one worked. Much better than Lucifer as rock star. I mean, certainly you know as the premise was being introduced at the beginning. You know, I was sort of I was thinking come on guys, are you really going to be able to pull this off? And I think they did do quite a good job of Lucifer. You know, since they are certainly playing him as, to a certain extent. I mean, you know, the way the angels and Castiel, you know, in particular, you know, have often been played of where they don't necessarily know that much about worldly affairs and the way things normally go. So having him pop into these iconic figures, he's gonna feel a little bit out of his depth and having to figure things out. I thought this one worked quite nicely, but absolutely. I mean, the way the British Man of Letters is playing out and having them be this really badass take no prisoners. and also just the implication of, you know, yes, you know, we've had this stuff under control on our island, you know, for decades now, and, you know, we just need to bring these Americans into line, is just a really nice play on sort of some stereotypical British attitudes over the years, which has been a lot of fun to see play out.
It definitely has been interesting, and I guess I find it kind of odd a little bit. This is where I guess this episode exposed a little bit of the weaknesses of the previous one, because I definitely had it in mind that if you're going to decide, hey, I should have, you know, the spawn of Lucifer, wouldn't it have been easier to do when you were Mr. Rockstar?
Yeah,
well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That's why I was kind of like alluding to the fact that, wow, Lucifer, you can get your groupies to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You're an amoral rock star and you can do whatever you want with your groupies. They're literally throwing themselves at you and you'd rather kill them.
Yes. Wait, well, you know, yeah, or well, I mean, just to briefly harken back to last week, or have them carve your name into themselves rather than
yes,
some other pursuits that could have been going on. Yeah.
After that you think to yourself, hey, maybe I can kind of breed.
Yes. Yeah, although, I mean, that they do seem to be playing this card of Lucifer not having been watching the show when he was more a part of it in those first 5 years. You know, I don't know if this is something that was being played up then, but where it does seem that perhaps all that time spent as the King of Hell and locked up in the cage, he doesn't necessarily think things through in that way. And even in this episode, I mean, it was, you know, no, it wasn't something he was thinking of until, you know, until she brought it up, because, you know, no, they've been having an affair. So it's, you know, yeah, just, it's, he's not necessarily the best tactician, but, you know, he's happy to go along when things present themselves.
Maybe that's a plot point. Maybe there's something going on with Lucifer that has changed and shifted his motivations and his. I don't know that he necessarily had motives before,
mm-hmm.
but it definitely feels like there's more aimlessness going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder if it is a plot point.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be getting so glaring that yeah, I'd strongly suspect this is something that's being spooled out to come to fruition later.
Yeah. All right, another couple episodes that came in at an average of 8. We have The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 7. The next time I hurt somebody, it could be you. These titles this season are awesome. Stefan's Christmas Eve dinner with Caroline is crashed by Damon and Sybil, and things quickly take a dark and twisted turn. When is there ever a good holiday meal in Mystic Falls? That's what I want to know. This show is almost infamous for having great Christmas episodes because they're always so twisted. And this was no exception. It was really well done. It was really hearkening back to some of the better moments in recent memory. And yeah, I really had a ball watching this episode. And like I said, these titles this season, they're having fun with their last season. It's like their victory lap.
I just have to ask John though. But do their family dinners rival some of those classics over on Being Human US?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do. Though, yeah, they don't have the one sister to really elevate things to another level. But yeah, they're pretty good. All right. We also have The Exorcist, Season 1, Episode 9, 162. A potential tragedy surfaces right before Pope Sebastian arrives, and Marcus has to intervene. Also, another episode that came in at an 8. This one felt a little bit like it could have edged up a bit if it wasn't for the fact that it was the penultimate episode of the season, and it felt like they were buying a little bit of time. It takes way too long for people to realize that Angela isn't herself. And she's really obviously not herself, but it's still fun watching things play out. It's just, yeah, I hope that they can stick the landing. I guess I'll find out after we're done here, perhaps, if that last episode manages to do so. Again, hopefully season finale, not series finale. Next we have, also coming in at an 8, Berlin Station, Season 1, Episode 9, Thomas Shaw. Having confirmed Hector's identity as Shaw, Daniel still faces various obstacles in turning him over to the Germans. Assailants, a kidnapping, and his own conscience as he learns the Thomas Shaw origin story. Which, at least in my mind, was not nearly as engaging an origin as I thought it would be.
No.
It was actually pretty just standard fare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? But I did feel like the whole thing with Hans was a bit of a fun twist.
I agree it was a good twist. I just felt like it was one of those twists where it felt like it just came out of nowhere. There hadn't been enough little details not that it needs to be laid out for us, but it was one of those cases where, and also especially the way they wound up just showing it all in flashback of was them recruiting him and basically laying it out point by point of yes, you're going to do this and undermine the station. And I felt that they hadn't done enough sort of giving us the background of why Hans might have felt so committed to doing that. Perhaps there could have been little intimations of more of a personal rivalry between him and Stephen, where this was personal to some extent. So while it was certainly a decent spy story twist, I just didn't feel like they really had done enough in the lead up to this to make it completely believable and not just yes, it's a spy story, we have to have a twist like this at the end. As I felt all along, certainly it's with this cast, they certainly did everything they could to sell it. I just wasn't completely buying it in the end.
Was it a matter of, because a lot of these shows, anything like this, you've definitely seen quite a bit of it, so you probably better judge of it. But I always feel like these kinds of shows, they need to play fair.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have at least the pieces out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to have at least some chance of putting it all together, and it, without it being one of these twists that comes out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah. I'm wondering, is that kind of the feel that you had, was that it was not playing fair with the audience?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, I definitely get that. I think that maybe especially in retrospect, and that's what one of the underlying things that was bothering me as I was watching earlier in the season, is that I felt like they were throwing a lot at us, but it wasn't cohering.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like they were hedging their bets in order to do something like this.
Yeah, but even then, you know, there are ways of throwing in, you know, more of a tension or more sort of a rivalry between the two services, so that when you then get to this point, you can be surprised, but at the same time, you know, realize, okay,
yeah.
There were those little intimations of problems between the two of them, or just between the two services in general.
Yeah, you only got hints of that. You know, you got those little comments here and there when Daniel was sleeping with the other agent about mm-hmm. there being a little bit of rivalry, but it always felt like the normal level of rivalry that you have between any foreign intelligence agencies.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, and yeah, I think I'm agreeing with you. I'm just musing on the fact that, yeah, they kind of threw a lot of stuff at the wall and then snuck something else in there. And said, see, this is the one that stuck.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait, that's not one of the things you threw.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
You can't do that. But no, it still worked. It just, I felt like it could have been even, it felt like there was enough something in there that could have, the episode itself could have been scored higher if it wasn't for the fact that they were kind of promising a payoff that never happened.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they gave us another one that they didn't earn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so, definitely.
Especially the Thomas Shaw thing. I just felt like, wow, that's it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, they built an awful lot of a legend out of that. But anyway.
Yeah, and I will just reiterate from last week. I mean, I mentioned the French series, The Bureau, which I've been watching on Sundance streaming, and Berlin Station has not been faring well in comparison to that, because that does deal with some similar themes of sleepers and moles and double agents and not being quite sure where people's loyalties lie. And in that case, between the French service and the CIA, you know, so yeah, some very similar themes, but done in a much more sophisticated and realistic manner.
Okay. Yeah, I know you've mentioned that before, so.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to a very different kind of show. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 2, Episode 8, The Chicago Way. The legends travel to 1927 Chicago and quickly realize they have been set up by Eobard Thawn, Damien Dark, and the newest member of the Legion of Doom, Malcolm Merlyn.
Yay.
Oh, yes. That was quite a bit of fun. This one coming in at an average of 7.83. And, I'm really quite happy to see Malcolm Merlyn back.
Mm-hmm.
Not so happy with how Snart came back. Or not.
Did he come back?
Did not come back, as the case may be. Yeah, Gary, exactly. But wow. Whoever did the wardrobe for Sarah this episode. Whoa. They definitely did a nice job there. And the nice thing about it is, I say that, and it feels like, wow, that's all you're reducing her character to. No. Her leadership skills, taking leaps and bounds this season. Really quite impressed by that. They're doing a lot with that character that I thought they were just going to have her be kind of the secret ninja of the group. But they're actually letting her develop. Huh. Anyway, Gary, your thoughts on this episode?
I'll agree with that. The Katie Lott's character, I didn't expect her to come to the forefront. I honestly thought maybe the professor might have stepped up a little bit more, or even, you know, Snart before he left the show. So she's a real surprise, and yeah, they're writing her very well, very very much the leader, so much you almost forget about her ninja skills or any of her other abilities, or that wanting to get her sister's killer or anything like that, because she is sort of looking at the big picture a lot more, it feels like, which is a great change. That being said, both you guys were thrilled to have Malcolm Merlyn back. I thought it was a bit of a stretch. We already have, you know, these two other recurring villains. I would have rather had them pull up somebody new, you know, maybe not a Vandal Savage per se, but you know, someone else from DC lore that that, you know, to introduce rather than them rehash Merlin again and try and explain to me why he's there, which I sort of don't quite understand. Is Thrawn bringing people through time travel? I don't quite get it. So I just wasn't that thrilled with it at all. The whole premise, Capone, and the whole show just seemed rather weak for me, and I didn't enjoy it. What am I missing? What were the high points that I did not see?
Well, my tongue-in-cheek reaction to Malcolm Merlyn is, you know, oh come on, guys, you're going back to the 20s, and we know John Barrowman can rock a long coat.
Wrong.
Yeah, you know, not quite the return of Captain Jack.
I was watching with my daughter. She's like, where do I know him from? and I said, coat, and then she started looking at me funny, and then I said, believe it or not, I said, Cardiff.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
Very nice.
Very nice. Yes, absolutely.
See,
that's where he came from. See, Gary, it's very clear. Thawne had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
It's the vortex manipulator.
Yes, right.
Yes, I he lives forever. Yes,
that's
I know.
It.
But that's not it. And that was that's sloppy writing. You have to give me more than just have him show up in a hat.
Well, let me ask
yes.
you.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
If you want to weigh in first, yeah,
the other point I wanted to mention is as someone who you know, yes, may not quite love the Untouchables movie quite as much as the two cast members did or two members of the team did. I do like it quite a bit. So I was very amused at the two of them rattling off all the Costner and Connery riffs throughout the episode.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was.
Yeah. That was a nice touch.
The baby carriage going by.
Yes, yes. Well. Yes. Yes, not going down the stairs, unfortunately.
True.
Yeah.
Well, can't go to Potemkin all the time.
No.
So Gary, here's my question. Because I don't necessarily agree in this particular case, but it is something that was in the back of my mind, and I was waiting for an example of it. They've got all of these characters or actors, characters, whatever you may want to call it, that are on kind of retainer for the DCW shows.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've got so many characters that they can play with. But if you're going to hire somebody to be in X number of episodes of four different shows, you've got to kind of force it sometimes. I just don't see how it organically happens, because it's like, yeah, we're going to option you for this many episodes across the year, this many episodes for this person, that many. And then it's like, oh, wait, how do we make them all fit in the time that we allotted for them? And I know that they've got some wiggle room. I mean, you pay them for X number of episodes and maybe you only use them for so many, but you still have to pay them and that kind of thing happens. But it still feels like, yeah, maybe, you know, we disagree on this particular one, but like the Laurel thing from earlier with Arrow, I still like, to me, it's like, ooh, is how is that going to land, right? Because I just see this is backfiring a little bit. You know, we thought it was a good idea, but maybe the way they're executing it leaves a little to be desired, or it can lead to some of the dissatisfaction, like what you're saying, where it's like they're just kind of popping them in.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, Thrawn makes sense. We know he's a speedster; he can travel through time. Okay, so you can put him reasonably anywhere.
Yeah.
We know Damian Dark is supposedly over 100 years old or something like that, or something. You know, if you establish the fact that he's some sort of long-lived person or immortal person, and you, or even lives hundreds of years, and then you plop in within that time frame, it's fine. But I never recall anything seeing Merlin being anything but 50 to 70 years old at best. No matter how clean living at Nanda Parbat slows down aging. It's just I would have loved some reason he was back there. You know, he was back there.
Yeah, other than the fact that they want to make sure that John Barrowman stays with them, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think he's a natural person to pull in, but like you said, they're going to have to explain that, you know, they're pulling him out of the timeline, basically.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know.
Or they said something like they brought him here for that job. I'm like, that's really sloppy.
Well, then, and that's kind of what I mean, is that, okay, so you know you want to have him in X number of episodes, yeah, so you contrive reasons to do it. And, you know, it worked okay for some of us, not for others, and it feels like this could be a symptom of that problem, possibly. But, yeah, you know, it's they're trying. They really are. It's maybe the problem that you had with Malcolm is, you know, I'll just speak for myself. I didn't have a problem necessarily with the way that Malcolm Merlyn was brought into the story, but I really was not satisfied at all with the way that they did the snart thing. So you option Wentworth Miller, and this is how you're going to use him? Again, you have a multiverse. You can actually have a living snart involved.
Yeah, but they don't want to do time and multiverse.
Sure they do.
No, they don't.
They've been doing it on The Flash.
Yes. Yeah, well,
I'm not saying that we want them to, but they set it up that way.
The thing is, I mean, even before they were introducing the whole multiverse in spades, just the fact that, you know, yes, he was killed in this explosion of a time controlling machine thingy, it just seemed classic, you know. Yes, he's off there, his essence is, you know, his spirit is out there in the ether somewhere and can get reconstituted whenever they feel like it.
Yeah, it's. It just didn't. I didn't like that explanation for it. Although it makes sense, I just felt like you're wasting your actor. Give him something better to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I guess now they're looking for the Spear of Longinus, huh? Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm just gonna let that hang out there.
Well, the Spear of Destiny has. They've had those in actually the. Earth 2 comic books for some time. That was the reason why Superman couldn't go over and hit Hitler.
Yeah, okay.
The Spear of Destiny created some sort of field around Europe that anybody with superpowers would fall under German control. So they that's why people without powers could go. Like, you know, Batman could go over there, but Wonder Woman couldn't.
It's very inconvenient. But... It's a storytelling device. I get it.
So is time traveling people.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of labored plotting, The Librarian, Season 3, Episode 4, and The Self-Fulfilling Prophecy. Baird sees a vision of her own death at the hands of an otherworldly assassin, so she sets out to stop the prophecy from coming true. This episode coming in at an average of 7.75, and, I'll say it's the strongest episode so far. This season, not saying a whole lot, but it's better than what a couple other episodes have been like, but I really felt like there were some things that were really obvious, like the cleaning lady that was conspicuously out of nowhere. Really, turns out to be important. Couldn't always, have imagined that.
Always wet, yeah.
Yeah, funny how that works. Mm. Yeah, but you seem to have also felt like this was the best episode of the season so far.
I felt it was. I thought it was really strong. I liked the Baird focus of it. It was sort of nice to have a break from, not a full break, but somewhat of a break from the regular librarians. And I enjoyed the whole premise. I thought it was nice. I was going to say it was nice. It was nice to have a small, tight cast. But as I think about it, I guess they all usually are. But this seemed just sort of. Tighter, I guess, maybe because everyone was constantly together during it. I enjoyed the mystery, not that it really puzzled me, but I did enjoy it unfolding along the way, I guess is a nice way to put it. It was good. I enjoyed the twist with the box and them being stuck in it at the end. I thought that was a nice little twist on everything. And overall, it's fun. Like I said, this is an intense drama, but I kept watching the whole time, and I looked, you know, was waiting for the, at least for me, for the commercials to end and, you know, get back to the show. And it was, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Rebecca Romijn, I thought did a reasonably good job. Sometimes her acting can be, or at least her delivery can be a little clunky. And I thought she did a reasonably well this time around. So.
Yeah. As I said, this was, the focus on Baird definitely was better than the focus on Flynn earlier this season.
What is it?
Yeah, I was going to say, faint praise. Okay, next we have Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 9, The Blueprint. President Kirkman deals with classified government documents being leaked online by a group that have taken refuge inside a foreign embassy that's beyond his reach. Boy, they really stole that one right out of the headlines. This one coming in at an average of 7.5. This episode just really didn't do it for me. The conspiracy elements really felt like they overshadowed this episode, and maybe it's just my general attitude towards the whole, you know, ripped from the headlines from 3 years ago plot. It just didn't really work for me. You know, they've done that story better elsewhere. Although it's kind of cliche to a certain degree at this point. We also had Van Helsing, Season 1, Episode 13, It Begins. Vanessa learns secrets from her past and finds herself at a crossroads, wondering if she is vampire or human. Elsewhere, Mohammed and Shima come to blows over their alliances. And this came in at an average of 7.5. It took all season for Vanessa to learn about her birthright. And the big twist at the end is a little obvious as a result. But hey, I like the fact that the vampires actually had motivations for capturing and wanting to dissect her. They just weren't, you know, broadly played bad guys. They had a plan. Ron Moore, Van Helsing's villains had a better plan.
Well, they had a plan.
They actually had a plan. They didn't just say that they did. They had one. So yeah, I like this whole idea that the show is called Van Helsing and the main character doesn't even know she's a Van Helsing until the final episode of the season. And it makes sense that she doesn't. I kind of like that. It's good storytelling. It's definitely a sleeper show as far as I'm concerned. It's you call it a guilty pleasure perhaps, but it's actually, you know, for a relatively low budget sci-fi show, it actually really brought the writing in many respects. So kind of impressed. And then finally we have Salem, Season 3, Episode 5, The Witch is Back. A traitor is exposed while a ghost from Salem's past makes a shocking appearance. And this came in at an average of 7.5. And Edmund and I both seem to have had our issues with this one. And I really, quite honestly, have the same problem that I had last week with it. There doesn't seem to be a really clear-cut story going on here.
No.
There's just a lot of people scheming. It's very soapy right now. Very gory, bloody soapy. But, it's just stuff is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like there's any point to it.
Yeah, and certainly given all of my inveigling against our trial devil, at least a bunch of these plots do seem to be converging on everybody's getting sick of the kid too. But, so it does appear that maybe he'll be out of the way at some point. But yeah, obviously we were watching this, or at least I know I was watching this before we got the news this was the final season. But yeah, it certainly feels at this point like it's kind of odd in a way now that we know that they seem to have actually gone into this knowing it was going to be their last year, and rather than having a sort of more coherent storyline, it feels more like okay, everybody come up with every idea you ever wanted to us to throw up there, and we're just going to do it before we get out of here at the end of the season.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it feels like. Maybe some of the writers from Berlin Station were helping them come up with the lines for this.
Yeah.
Throw everything at the wall. Where's the kitchen sink?
Yes.
Throw that too. I mean, it's all very fun,
yeah.
But it does get repetitive. And that's the part that I'm at right now. It's like there's been 5 episodes of literally 90% the same stuff. And it all looks vaguely the same because it's all drenched in red and black.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I don't have a problem with that either, but it's like,
yeah, well, although that is another thing that I was really starting to notice this episode is there is a lot of this show that just feels, you know, there's, you know, where it, yes, it's at, a lot of it happens at night. It's it's nocturnal goings on among the witches and out in the woods, but there is so much that is just plain dark and hard to see at times.
Which, quite frankly, was not the way that the first season was.
No,
there was, and that's where I think we're not getting enough variety in what's on screen. I really do think that's it, is that you go from one scene of dark interior shot to another, and then the outside shots are almost always at night now.
Yeah.
And I get that, yes, the show has taken that kind of dark turn where Salem as a town has completely fallen to darkness, but yeah, it just feels like it's something is going on here because, you know, you don't have a central polar opposite anymore. You just have varying factions of evil trying to take over.
Right. Right.
So I maybe that's what it is that it's like we don't have enough variety in terms of the types of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, because certainly, I mean, compared to the first season, I mean, you know, there have been all these things that have happened, and these grand rites and darkness literally falling. But we're at this point, we're not getting anything of the regular day to day, whether in Salem or in Boston. The last episode when Cotton gets picked up, and you're thinking, you know, like, oh, you know, yes, we're probably going to get, you know, get to see some actual regular Puritans for once. But no, even they are in service to the Dark Lord and ready to start chopping up his liver and making meat pies.
It was all fun, but it's starting to become more and more of the same.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. And yeah, if this is supposed to be Mary's last hurrah, there's not been a whole lot of her.
Yeah,
that doesn't help either. Plus, not enough of Mercy. Anyway, I'm saying that, and I kind of, you know, for other reasons, but they're also, from a plot perspective, you've set her up as the owner of the one running this dark brothel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really doing much.
No.
At least not right now. It's just another faction. Like, what is the purpose of it? What are her motives? Other than to simply influence the people in charge of the town. Everybody's doing that right now. Like, what is the end game here? Maybe that's the point. I mean, there is the possibility that the point is that all these factions want control for their own particular reasons, but they've lost their own plot. As far as I know, the only one that really makes any sense is that the kid wants to bring about the dark, you know, kingdom on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But even his brethren are just like, I'm so sick of you.
Yes.
Anyhow, we'll see. I mean, it's still a little bit, but we're like halfway through the season at this point, I guess. So
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's still time. There's still time.
Because actually I was looking that up earlier. That is a 10 episode final season. So yeah, they are literally halfway through. Yeah. But it does continue to amuse me, though, this whole thing of, you know, it really did not help in terms of if we were supposed to give this kid any credit for being a potential leader. It's like, you know, no, you do not cast Simcoe as his right hand man.
No.
You know, I know I keep going back to this, but it's just so glaring each week. It's like,
yes.
No, I'm a much better villain than you. I really need to get you out of the way.
Aren't you a little short to be a Dark Lord?
Yes.
Simcoe, never change. This guy needs a job. Like, seriously, if they ever do a remake of Farscape, he'd make a perfect Scorpius.
Oh, God, yes. Yes.
All right. Let's see. That's it for this week's episodic discussion. And where are we at here? I think we're
about 45 minutes in.
All right. So we do have a little bit of time to do a little bit of a roundtable of what we've been up to, or any exciting things coming up other than the holidays. How about you, Edmund? Anything to report?
Yeah, actually, I will mention...
Yeah, was there some show that you were watching and you'd sing the praises of? Didn't it, like, end or something?
Wait a minute.
Rectify.
Yes, of course. Rectify's series finale did spool out this last week. I had a couple of minor quibbles with it. There was Ray McKinnon, the creator, writing and directing the finale, and there was a little bit of dialogue that felt a little on the nose. But I can cut them some slack given the nature of this show. And there was perhaps the introduction of Caitlin Fitzgerald from Masters of Sex. I wasn't completely happy with in this final season, and she did get a bit of a slightly prominent role in the final shot, which I was a little down on initially. Now that I've thought about it a little bit more, I'm not quite as annoyed by it as I was as I was watching it. So I would say it was a case of a fabulous series coming to a very good close just maybe not quite the pitch perfect close that I was hoping for. I think there was a lot of, some of the stuff that went on in the penultimate episode that was quite extraordinary, and the finale didn't quite live up to that. But still, now that it is all spooled out, I'm going to really enjoy going back and watching it from the beginning, knowing where they all get to in the end. And on a considerably lighter note, I did want to mention that I've talked over the years now about reading various of Ed Brubaker's independent comics, Velvet and Fatal and the Criminal books, and having gone through most of those, or just about all of those, I finally went back to his some of his Captain America work, and I've been reading The Winter Soldier. I'd heard some comments talking about how his the Winter Soldier work in particular, was much more spy based, and certainly similar to some of the stuff he's now gotten to really run with in Velvet. So I'm about halfway through his specific Winter Soldier run, I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I mean, certainly the dynamic between him and Black Widow, even though they are obviously super trained and enhanced. It is certainly more spy based, even though with certainly lots of that shield type action, and certainly the what we were seeing in the Winter Soldier movie, and then in the Civil War follow up on screen. But that's been a lot of fun to finally see some of the source material for that.
Very cool. All right, let's see. How about you, Gary?
I have a big trip planned, so I haven't been doing that much. I did manage to get something delivered today, but I won't have the chance to look at it, and it's really frustrating to me. It just came out the week we're recording. It's called The Roddenberry Vault. And what Gene Roddenberry had stuck away was not by any means a complete episode of the original series, but cut scenes, scenes where there are alternate takes for certain episodes. And there's over an hour plus of real original footage from the original show that had never been seen before. There are some scenes that have been mentioned, like they know it was filmed, but they could never find any proof until now. So I'm quite looking forward to that as a big Star Trek fan, especially a big TOS fan. So it's really exciting. And while they haven't slapped or made a big deal about it, for the 50th anniversary, that's exactly why Rod Roddenberry said it was being released. He always wanted to do something big for the 50th, and this was the biggest thing he had that he could give to the fans, so to speak, even if we have to buy him a Blu-ray. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else at the moment. While I've been behind in our recordings, I did finally finish Westworld, which I enjoyed a great deal, including the end episode, which shook everything up, changed everything, and started it all over again. What else has I been watching? I think that's about it for me for tonight.
Yeah, I know that you mentioned off air before we were recording that you had finished up watching Westworld, and that you had actually been one of the ones that did not predict that the spoilers for Westworld, for those who haven't already heard them, that William and the Man in Black are the same person.
Yes, I was very surprised by that. I really did not see it coming, and it was, like one of those light bulb moments for me when it happened. I was gasping in astonishment, and it was a very nice payoff to make it worth watching the series. Thinking that we were watching the same time frame all along, only to realize that we definitely were not, and it helped me understand the why sections of things were shut down and things of that. It was like that. That piece of the puzzle that just made everything lock in. And I was like, oh my gosh, everything just rolled out right in front of me. It was quite the payoff.
It's interesting because, like I mentioned before, and people who have been listening to Edmund and I kind of talk about the show, especially in recent weeks, is that, having kind of come across that theory and adhere to it, I felt that in the finale that the revelation of it was so long. Because I guess it was explaining things that I had already kind of figured out, from you know, the various theories and such. So it's interesting to hear that, because you had gone into it and didn't really catch those things, that the finale was that much more satisfying to you. So I guess it's almost, you know, that's the curse that sometimes happens when you're theorizing so much. Yes. that you overanalyze, and then you kind of ruin a little bit of it for yourself down the road. So it's I'm actually gratified to hear that someone did kind of get it as the writers clearly intended, which was not to really pick up on it until that moment. And it sounds like you really got the full impact of what they were looking for.
Oh yeah, I probably did, and I really wasn't reading spoilers on it or anything mm-hmm. like that. So I'm glad I watched it in the way I did, I suppose. I'm not happy that it took me that long, but at the same time, I'm glad I was surprised. Yes.
Yeah, it's the kind of show where it's like, huh, you know, I could have avoided all those spoilers and discussions and everything else, perhaps, but not really spoilers, because I never really looked at that before I watched this, you know, each episode. But to me, it was almost like I needed to go and read or listen to some of that stuff, mainly because I needed help keeping track of everything. So it was kind of along the way, theorizing and everything else along with the crowd. But it's it almost feels like there is a value to some of these shows to just going ahead and taking it in as step by step.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Although I did find it interesting that I still think that the writers were aware that there was going to be that both obviously they wanted people to be surprised by it, but also I think knew that there was going to be that, you know, that crowd out there who were going to be dissecting it and theorizing it, and so they threw in that little bit of misdirection where it almost seemed like it, you know, oh no, it's not William, it's Logan, who could have been the one winding up as the Man in Black, just to sort of try and throw off the people who would be thinking they had figured it out all along.
Yeah, that's true. I remember we were talking about that last time. The other thing I was going to bring up is, other than the fact that, you know, as I said at the beginning of the week, there's quite a few things that we will address, not next week because we're off next week, but the week after. But you know, it's the holidays, so a little bit of time is freeing up a little bit here and there. Played a new card game. It's not new. It's been around for a while, but it's new for us, called Super Fight. I don't know if you've ever played that, either one of you?
No.
Okay. Basically, think of it as a somewhat tamer kind of riff on Cards Against Humanity, but it is basically where you have like character cards and then like action cards. So you might have, you know, Captain America, you know, has, you know, or, you know, deploys an orbital bombardment or something like that, right? So you have like examples of things like that. So basically you're given a location and a scenario, and then everybody else who's playing has to pick a character and an action, and then you basically quote unquote fight each other based on the characters and the actions that you've picked. And then, you know, whoever the person is that drew the location card and the scenario card, they judge which one won the battle. So it's kind of, like I said, a little bit of a take on that. It's a little more family friendly. They never really go quite as, you know, risque or or absolutely horrible as some of the Cards Against Humanity things are. But yeah, we had a good time with it. It is something that just about everybody in the family can do. And, you know, you can definitely play up the scenarios in as twisted as a way you want to. But at least the cards start off fairly benign. But what made it even more fun is that we were playing with the anime expansion pack. So things got really kind of off the wall, because of course there were, you know, mixing superhero stuff with anime stuff was definitely adding some flavor to it that would otherwise not be there. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we just had a great time laughing and at the basically very creative things that everybody was coming up with. So really, really fun game. I would definitely recommend it for you know, maybe family friendly type parties. If it's, you know, where not everybody here can pull off a Cards Against Humanity session, but maybe something that's one step down in what's the word I'm looking for? Severity comes to mind, but yeah, like I said, a little bit more all ages type of stuff. So. Yeah, worth a look for those who like some of those more interactive games. So that's all I have, really, because it's only been 4 days since the last time we recorded, so not a whole lot of time to do much else. But looking forward to a couple weeks away and time in seeing some movies, catching up on some games and such. There's a couple things I'm sure I'm going to get for Christmas that I can't wait to play. So there you go. So this is the last episode before the holidays for us. So I guess I'm just going to wish all of our listeners out there Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whichever persuasion you particularly follow. There you go. Please have a happy one. And we will see you in the new year. Any other last thoughts, guys?
I will just reiterate, happy holidays to everybody, and have a great time out there.
And Festivus for the rest of us. Okay.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.